Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 20th episode of Entrepreneurship with Christo. Today, I have the pleasure of having Norm Jenkins again on the program. Norm is going to talk about culture from an entrepreneurial perspective, and we also get into some other aspects about relationships with partners, particularly life partners, and also balancing your personal needs with the needs of the business. Norm is what you see is what you get type of guy. Please enjoy my conversation with Mr. Norm Jenkins. My original objective with this was really kind of just to suck it and see, but really I was interested in the personal conversations about the entrepreneurial journey, the challenges, you know, physically, emotionally, you know, financially that hit you. And you know, and I definitely think that's part of it. But I think that when it's a company that I don't know, I should learn to shut up a little bit and let them talk. And then maybe later on get into the more nuanced stuff.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's like your early days in this, and it's sort of like learning the balance between when you need to interject and steer things back into where they need to go versus allowing the other party to sort of
just go into a monologue,
expound on their views in some particular area. Yeah. You know, like it's hard because I was listening to an interview the other day. It was between John Howard and an ex-member of parliament of in the UK. And it was him talking at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship conference.
Right.
And so it was a very important conversation about John Howard's period of, first of all, being in opposition and then his subsequent four terms as the Prime Minister in Australia and just how much he achieved over that period. And when someone of that calibre is on the other side of the table, it's very hard to understand, you know, well, you know, what you're saying is interesting, but it's not really our topic right at the minute.
Right.
But John was, you know, he was, Mr. Howard, he was very good at bringing himself back onto task. So yeah, some people aren't so good at that. So you've got to help them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's probably a good segue into the conversation. So again, this is going to be informal. Thanks for agreeing to come back. As I said, our original one, even though everything went wrong and everything, I don't know, the problems that I had when I first started the podcast just were ridiculous, the amount of problems that I had. But I seem to stumble my way through them to solve them. So now this model works quite well and I can get them up pretty quickly now. And so it's interesting how I've, sort of ironed out all those bugs. But we were talking, so welcome back, Norm Jenkins. So we'll rely on people knowing a little bit about who you are. But maybe you do a quick intro of yourself, and then we'll crack on with the topic at hand around the way I'm framing it is around culture within organisations, but certainly culture, building culture from a startup, I guess is where I'm going. But we can go wherever you like.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't had any sort of previous contact with myself, I guess I'm your classic sort of low-level entrepreneur, I would call myself, in the sense that I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. So I've spent my entire working life moving from one opportunity to the next, morphing businesses into whatever they needed to be, to make whatever I needed to overcome changing market circumstances, to get money in the door so I could feed my family, to do the things I needed to do to, I guess, be where I am now. So it was challenging at different times and then at others rewarding, but many more challenging times than rewarding times, I must say.
Right. I resemble some of those comments. Okay. I think it's interesting. One of the things that prompted this for me was I think you really hit the jackpot with i4 when it came to who you hired as your operations director, manager, who brought together a disparate group of executive CEOs, reasonably high level people who were used to self-determining. Not only did she rally them into cohesive group of professionals doing a specific job, but also built like a culture of, and people use the word family, but it really was, but also a complete lack in my knowledge of any politics, frank and fearless conversations with everybody within the organisation. Everybody was bloody happy to be there.
It's great when you're in an organisation where there's little in the way of egos sort of getting in the way. And you're right, it did hit the jackpot in Suzanne coming on board, the stars aligned, I often would refer, that moment to.
But that was your intent as well, though. I don't want to take the, put credit where credit's due. I mean, this was what you led with.
Yeah, I think in some ways, and maybe this is more back to who I'd become over the years, is, you recognise what you're not good at and when you need help. And I knew that the important ingredient I needed was the glue for everyone in the organisation. Just like at home, my wife, Joanne, she's been with me from the start, and without her being my backbone at home, I couldn't have gone off and did the things that I did.
Sure.
And I think that the same analogy applies in business and with, the entrepreneur versus, call it the doer, the person that executes on the vision that you have. Whilst the vision can inspire people to want to get involved in work in a particular way, you still need that substantive sort of person who can connect the dots and get people to work together, to fill in the minutiae, of what they need. Which is a skill I do not have, So that was what, Suzanne was in the business, an amazing operator who had, the depth of character to not bring her ego to the table in anything that she did, which was, amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But again, she's only one human being, so unfortunately we can't, I guess we may be able to clone her quite easily against her will. But she's one human being, I guess. And I'm, I'm spinning up a new venture, which I won't go into now, but, one of the things I'm thinking about is, a workforce that's remote. There is no central, HQ, physical HQ. And how do I tap into that experience that I saw that you did? And I'm sure there are a bunch of people out there. They're at that 1, 2, 3 person level. So I've got a programmer, and I've got a couple of people that I'm thinking about. Once I get the money to bring on board one way or the other. But it's front of mind because I just don't want unnecessary chaos in this business. And so I wonder I'm looking at marketing, I'm looking at cap raising, I'm looking at technology development, I'm looking at legals, I'm looking at finance, I'm looking at everything. But in the back
of my mind, classic entrepreneurial journey, isn't it? Every time you do it, it's always the same. You're always coming back to it.
But in the back of my mind is I just, I believe I want to hire for culture, and I'll train for skills. I mean, you've got to have some obviously core skills. But you don't have to be a rocket scientist to, to do the thing. So I guess, how important is it, and how would you advise businesses that are entrepreneurs that are kicking off now to think about this?
Well, so the core, in my belief, you know, probably going back to that brilliant book by Jim Collins, Good to Great.
Yep.
You know, I think that really encapsulates a lot of the key attributes of a leader in an organization. One of those that I think is sometimes very hard for most lead entrepreneurs in a new venture is humility.
Mm-hmm.
So that ability to sort of pull back from your own desires and intentions, and allow the talent that you've got around you to shine, you know. And when you start to see that occurring, and you recognize this can happen without you, you know, you start to reinforce how much you pull back, you know, and give the reins to other people. Because, you know, those early days of sleepless nights and worry about, are you going to have the money? Are you going to be able to keep trading in 3 months' time when it all runs out? You know, where's the next, you know, tranche coming from? You know, what customer can you get on quickly through the door, get them to pay quickly so you can, you know, send it straight out the door to pay the next supplier or, you know, person that you're employing or whatever. You know, that whole thing is, you know, that merry-go-round. That's what you're trying to sort of diffuse through everyone else in the organization so that you as the entrepreneur can maintain your vision on where things are going whilst everyone else becomes concerned with the day-to-day of actually making it work.
Mm.
You know, because, you know, that you can't be everything to everyone. But it takes a while to get that, you know, what do you call it, breadth of understanding about who you are, you know, and it's sort of like,
I was going to say,
for me, it was a long journey.
I mean, we're both, you know, well over 30.
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
So, and so, you know, those epiphanies occur, you know, a decade, 2 decades later, and you go, you know what, I'm not omnipotent. I'm not, you know, I do need help. You know, somebody who's 25, 30 years old may have it, particularly, and I had some successes early stages, and I thought I was, you know, kissed on the forehead by God. I thought this stuff is easy. You know, I had more money than I knew what to do with, you know, in the, you know, late 1990s, early 2000s, before the dot-com bomb. And I just thought it was all me. Rather than circumstances, really.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That sort of free cash is a real it's a real magnet for pretty poor behaviour in the end, isn't it? You know, it's like I remember those wonderful 90s as well. You know, when money was plentiful in the businesses that I was involved with at the time. And, you know, you could get whatever car you wanted. You could, you know, get the resources together you needed to go on good holidays and whatever, in whatever manner you chose to do that. But there wasn't much thinking around, you know, the importance of scale and not, you know, the organization not being solely dependent on you as the core party driving everyone to get where they needed to go.
Yep.
You know, and so, you know, I some of my health problems that I'm suffering now are the result of, you know, 25, 30 years of pushing and pushing and pushing to get where I eventually got to. But you know,
there's a cost
that could have been avoided. That could have been avoided with some prudent people being around me and me understanding what prudent was,
right?
You know, yeah, And I think that's the value, I guess, of these sorts of, you know, podcasts and that sort of thing is that, well, if you're listening, you know, you have a chance to speak to people that are probably speaking, you know, very much from their own experience and their heart about what it really meant to, you know, to get where they got to, and trying to not varnish that with you know, the other benefits of getting there, because, you know, there are lots of benefits, you know. Being autonomous and being in control of your own destiny, I think, are the most intrinsic benefits of being an entrepreneur, you know. Having control over your own future, you know, it's like there's nothing better than to be in that space.
I'd be interested in your view on this is something that's becoming apparent to me more recently, I have to say, unfortunately. Would have loved to have known this 20 years ago. But there seemed to be, or there seems to be, a disconnect. There's absolutely a disconnect between what's really going out in the world and what you think should be going out in the world. So if you say, okay, I'm going to call 20 people, and out of those 20 people, I should have 5 sales or whatever it is, you know, the kind of the classic old sort of conversion rate. The reality is, you may get bounced through all of those calls, and you may or may not know the reason. It could be the script, it could be, you know, how you're framing it, it could be just your impression of the value of what you're trying to sell. When you reach out to get help or to get advice or to get you know, an introduction to someone doesn't return your call, and you think, oh, the bastard, you know what, you know, he must not think this what I'm doing is good. And so what I found is that you've got to become quite stoic. And you've got to, you know, the old test and adjust in the military. You know, when you fire the bullet, and if the bullet doesn't land right, well, then test and adjust, shoot, and bring it on, and just trust that in time, you will latch on to something that you can then lock down. That separation between, you know, real and imagined is a very, very important thing, where you've got this external. It's like a digital twin in your head of what the world actually looks like, and that digital twin is not what the world looks like. It's what you think the world looks like.
Yeah, I think it's that nexus between capability and imagination.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, so imagining, you know, you can do this, and then the capability that you have often needs some adjustment, you know, because you don't fully understand what market it is you're getting into, right. and their drivers, you know, whatever's forcing them to operate in the way that they are, you're yet to learn that. And as you learn those things, you adjust. And the capability is about your ability to adjust. Perhaps one of the reasons why I think I've had about 26 or 27 jobs over the term, you know, the discrete things that I've had to, where I could say, I actually had to move into doing that,
right,
to fully understand what that was about.
Yeah, like sound engineering for me in this podcast, something I never thought I'd get involved with.
Exactly, yeah. You know, you had to develop that skill to really create the product that people would want to listen to, you know. So technically, you know, it was a quality of the sound, but in actual fact, it's you know, well, it's what people feel comfortable listening to, you know, and will come back to and refer others to listen to as well.
Get some value. Yeah. And I guess that then taking that back to, you know, this nebulous startup, the, you know, the new widget startup, because you've got a, particularly in services, but you've got this conception in your head of what, you know, your product looks like or what your service looks like and what the value proposition is. And then lo and behold, a few months later, you have, you know, dozens of conversations. You think, you know, hang on a minute, I've got to change this because the way I'm seeing this is actually not right. They will buy it, but it's got to be reframed. It's got to be repackaged and redesigned in many cases. So it actually to get that market fit. And then going back to culture, then you've got to turn around and say to your team, I got it wrong. Or, you know, we didn't quite have it right. and I guess understanding that we're always adjusting, and we're trying to listen to the market and respond accordingly. And then some people, if you don't get the culture right, go, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Some people will say, you know, it is about, you know, dozens and dozens of mistakes that are then used as data to create the service that actually is going to have market fit. Mm-hmm. But some people are going to look at it and go, well, he has no plan. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's, or she, and they're making decisions that clearly are wrong because he's making all these mistakes. To the same situation with two different interpretations. Do you need everybody to be, you know, on board with the new, you know, that dynamic, you know, lots of mistakes and then we get it right? Or do you believe that, you know, you can accommodate some people who just need certainty?
Well, I think it's like what you say up front, you know, it's like, you know, when you first meet people, do you have all the answers? You know, it's like, do you come across as someone who's, you know, clearly understands what, you know, what it's all about? And, you know, if you're recruiting people that are, you know, happy to work for someone who clearly understands where they're going, you know, perhaps you're not, you know, certainly wouldn't be the type of person I'd want to employ, you know, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like that difference between, you know, you have to give something of yourself and expect something of yourself in business, you know, and so the people that work with you, you're wanting more than just the job description, yeah. You know, you're wanting more out of them. You know, it's like their creativity. It's their ability to see a problem and come up with the sorts of experiments that you can run to test the hypothesis that you're trying to prove or disprove,
yep.
And get to that really quickly, because if you don't, then you run out of money, you know.
Yeah, so, that's right. And like what you were saying earlier too about, you know, you giving people the freedom to, it's a hard thing to do when you can see people making mistakes that you know they are mistakes and you're actually already there in terms of what the right or wrong way is to do it. If you're burning through your own money, particularly for it's your own capital that you're allocating to the business, that's a teeth gritting moment where you know emotions can run high.
Oh, for sure. Well, I think in some ways it's part of professional development in my mind. It's almost like it's an underlying sort of thing, because your resilience to that testing regime and seeing people have to go through that learning process, you know, the pain of not getting something right, you know, to know that it's cost them time, effort, you know, first of all, because, you know, obviously they assume something didn't work out, and so, you know, whatever intellectual, you know, sort of energy they put into that, well, that's gone. To get to a point where they've spent the company's money on not getting any further down the track, or that's what they believe, but the company itself to have the resilience to allow that expense to occur. So when you think about that, you know, like, let's pull that back to, it's not just the company, it's the investors and their mindset.
Yeah.
It's the people that put up the money. So in most of my ventures, it's been my money, you know, so, you know, it was reasonably easy to adjust my thinking to allow a certain latitude in how far people were allowed to go in trying things out. But when you're looking after someone else's money, the context is very, very different. Unless you understand their culture and they're the right sort of investor for your type of organization.
Yeah.
And then there's that alignment that's going on between everyone about how important it is to learn, you know, along the way, and that we're going to make mistakes, and that those mistakes are going to be painful financial as well as emotional lessons for everyone along the way. So, you know,
it's
finding everyone in the chain in that same culture is so important.
Yeah, it reminds me of a book that I read a long, long time ago. I should circle back and reread it because it's been 2 decades at least, possibly three. What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School, I think it was called. So it's all the things that are not... So you can use a spreadsheet, you can structure up a marketing plan, you can write a pitch, you can write... You can do everything. But there are a bunch of things that no one... It's only experience. Sorry about that. Let me just kill that. It's only experience that'll really give that to you. I can't really sing the praises of the book, but it did leave an impression on me. I have to reread it to see what it says, you know, through these eyes now. This is version Peter Crusoe 3.0. But I wonder, how do you get that from, you know, when you're at that earlier stage? So, you know, who is a good advisor? Who is a good, I mean, you know, look, I value, you know, obviously the sort of advice and the insights that you have, you know, I find them very, you know, great and insightful. But what should somebody be looking for? You know, because I've seen that there's a lot of people out there who claim to be business advisors, and really they worked in big corporates, they retired, or they went out to the world. Now they're saying, you know, I'll advise you as a startup, or I'll advise you as a small business, and whatever. I have my hesitancies around those sorts of people.
Mm. Yeah. What should people be looking for? Well, I think first of all that there has to be, you know, some capability that this other party has that they're bringing to the table, with that you know is filling gaps in your own skill set, whatever that is. So whether that's connections into markets, you know, connections to money, you know, or those things, and that sort of is, you know, a reasonable, you know, starting point, but. The reason why you'd work with anyone that has those things, you know, over another, is how will they work with you personally? Where will they fit into the team? How will they conduct themselves to represent the ongoing culture that you're trying to build up in your organisation? As I remember early days in my last venture, I spoke to a number of, call it, business consultants that were going to help us put together the management system that would sit in the background of how the senior leadership team in the company would operate. One of them I was put onto by a very respected and well-known person in the entrepreneurial space. But that person that I spoke to, I didn't connect with them. They just there was something about them that you know, they were saying all the right things, and I could see that, you know, it was all really logical, but there was just no connection there.
Mm.
And it's like that gut feel, you know. And as you get along in the thing, you know, so as you're a young person, you should rely on that. But you're less, you know, it's less of a trained organ, you know, that gut feel. Yeah, when you're young. Or early days in your business, when you feel a newbie in the business space or entrepreneurial space, so what you want is someone who has that expertise and background, and is going to provide you that linkage in experience that you don't have, but who really understands what your vision is and buys into that, you know, and is sort of like, it's, you know, it's something that you can see they buy into as the entrepreneur, them as the, you know, support for your entrepreneurial journey. You know, you need to know they believe in your vision and want it as much as you do, and are willing to go to whatever ends there are to help that come about. That's the right type of person to be working with.
How do you reconcile the, you know, not having somebody who just agrees with everything you say? Because sometimes there's money changing hands too, right? So So, you know, everybody wants $1,000 a month coming from, you know, 20 individuals there's got to be, I think there needs to be an integrity, and there needs some level of, not necessarily friction, but just pushback on certain assumptions, kind of talking about the imaginary digital twin of the world and saying, you know, actually that's not the way, and really for you to hear it and then put your ego aside and say, okay. But at the same time, not just taking everything holus bolus from that individual. Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by 3P Legal. I've been a customer of Peter North as my lawyer and now 3P Legal for over a decade. Peter and his team are friendly and approachable, which takes the stress out of having to navigate the complexities of legal business matters. Whether starting a business, buying or selling a business, handling contracts or estate planning, their personalized attention and quality of work is second to none. Find Peter and his team at www.3pcorp.com.au or email pnorth@3plegal.com.au if you need commercial or personal legal services, particularly if you're a startup.
Do you have a self-managed superannuation fund that holds Bitcoin or other digital assets? Leveraging DAX's unique technology, DAX Digital Attestation Report simplifies your SMSF audit compliance, divorce, or other dispute resolutions. Recognized by Australian auditors and adhering to regulatory standards, their report extends beyond audits to offer decisive evidence in disputes. Prioritizing your privacy and security, DAX simplifies digital asset management and provides peace of mind. Their advanced technology ensures a straightforward approach to complex issues from audit protection to legal dispute evidence. Enhance your digital asset management and dispute resolution with DAX innovative solutions. If you are an SMSF trustee, accountant, or auditor, or have a dispute regarding digital assets like Bitcoin, contact DAX today at hello@dax.io. That's hello@dacforcharliesforsierra.io, or call 1-300-346-495, or go to their website, dax.io.
Well, maybe my idea here is that if you're talking to someone about potentially working with you for a considerable period of time, because let's face it, you know, that entrepreneurial journey isn't something that's going to sort of come to fruition in 12 months. You know, it's probably a 10-year gig,
right?
And so you're not just interviewing someone, you know, now for a couple of bucks now. You're interviewing them for a long-standing relationship, you know, in a way, a bit of a marriage of people over the journey of that venture. And so I think you have to take the longer-term vision on who you want involved and will they be around in 10 years, you know, will their pursuits pull them to other things? You know, are they so committed to you to still want to be around in those future years, you and your vision?
But I guess if you're, if you're at that sort of clean sheet of paper startup stage and you've engaged with someone and there's somebody's fit for purpose to get you going, get the aircraft built, dragged out of the hangar, pointed down the runway, and try and get its nose up. By the time you get its nose up, maybe it's somebody else that needs to help you sort of, climb hard, and get properly airborne.
Yeah. So I think that's sort of more about perhaps deciding that. So in the sorts of relationships that I want to have with any organisation that I might work with, it would be along the basis of trusted long-term advisor and friend and confidant and
ideally you've worked with them before too.
Mentor.
Yeah.
It's not about an engagement to achieve a certain outcome. See you later. You know, because chances are the outcome is long enough away that by the time you get there, it'll have morphed into something else anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the perfect scenario is they're an investor and an advisor. So they've got skin in the game. They've put some of their capital down. So they've bet on you, and really the business coach really is, you know, I've set up an accounting firm. I've never run an accounting firm before. I need, you know, somebody to talk to. There's a place for that, definitely.
Yeah,
but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about
We're talking about new territory. You know, it's like we're talking about new markets. New technologies, you know, big scalable opportunities that disrupt current ways of doing business. So it's a very different it's a very different beast to you know, your accountant, you know, sort of 5 years out of you know, a degree, wanting to start their own accounting practice, for example.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort of go into some controversial territory here. So where does, you know, diversity, equity and inclusion sit within the entrepreneurial endeavour, do you believe?
So I would say to a great extent, the value that I saw in my most recent venture was in the diversity and equity model that we approached with. Before that, I don't think I would have given it much credence. You know, it would have been right capabilities and skills, not in that order, sorry, it would be right values, right capability of skills, irrespective of gender or, you know, preference or inclination in any other realm, right? And often it was the first party that presented with those characteristics who got the nod to get a role.
Right.
With my last venture, there were quite a few people that presented with the capabilities at the time of recruiting, because we got literally, you know, hundreds of people applying for roles, but we didn't appoint the first person that resonated with us.
Right.
We were looking for the right mix of people for the organization. It was the first time that I've consciously not employed people who fit the bill the day we interviewed them, as the first, you know, the first one off the rank. We had that equity and diversity mix, but it was about trying to ensure that there was the right balance in the organization more generally, and trying to emulate what it is that what the government was pushing us to do, because that was a government role that we were taking on, and we were trying to replicate exactly what they wanted us to be in our organization, from the way we were set up from a digital perspective, in our online sort of presence, in our systems that we're working with, to the mix of people in the organization from a gender perspective and a diversity perspective as well.
So that's a client dictating that, but from a effectiveness and you know, sort of commercial outcome point of view, do you think that, assuming it's not a government client, or, you know, you've got you know, a market, finance or whatever, what is the right way to do this and what is the wrong way to do this? Obviously, you're not going to get a panacea of different skin colors, heights. Some PhDs, some, you know, finished year 10. So there's got to be a fit. And there's got to be a capability, right? If you're setting up a sprinting team, you know, you're not going to have, you know, dwarves and obese people in a sprinting team, right? You're not going to win the Olympics. How do you frame this so it actually delivers the value that you're looking for, so you can really extract that value and then, you know, obviously create a sustainable organization, as opposed to just lining up with policies that may change tomorrow?
So I think it takes a bit of a leap of faith in what you've sensed from the conversations that you've had with those likely candidates before you appoint them. You know, like you need to be going with people that fit, you know, what it is that you believe where you want to take your organization. And like we said before, and perhaps before we even started recording this conversation, you know, we come up with, you know, that people can pretty much be trained to do a lot of what we do. However, you can't get people that come from the right origin, you know, in terms of where they sit culturally, you know, with each other, with other people, how they sit. And you know, hand in my heart, everyone in my last venture was someone who, you know, you'd get in your trenches with, you know, you want
that Peter Christe guy. Work. Not that Peter Christe guy.
No, but it's like, you know, that was the primary selecting sort of criteria. Is this someone we feel will fit with the business? And look, early days, you know, there was just a couple of us involved in selecting who was coming in. But as we got more sophisticated around this, there were three levels of checking that occurred, you know, sort of like happened at a state level, then it happened at operations level, and then, you know, it was finally sort of, you know, with me, and not necessarily in that order, but bouncing up and down between those different levels, you know, we would come to an agreement on whether or not a person was right, and then bring them in. And look, they mightn't have been the best candidate on the basis of their credentials, for example, but they were the best candidate based on their values and likely fit for the organisation.
So
sure,
so
we got it wrong a few times, but mostly we got it right. Yeah.
So it's personality type, but I guess it's also, you know, if you've come from a culture, you know, South America or something like that, you know, you're going to come to the conversation with a different perspective on some of these things, but particularly if you're dealing with Australian nationals who've, you know, born and raised here several generations back, you know, that must be tricky. That must be tricky. But I guess ultimately, you know, if you're clear, I guess you keep an eye on it too. You know, there's a risk associated with not getting it right. There is no absolute. So on the balance of probabilities, you know, Fred Schnurberger is going to fit. He's our candidate of choice. However, you know, there's a trial period. Hopefully you're going to watch him for 6 months until you align your bet with the outcome. You know.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I don't know when you've made the decision to appoint someone. You know, you need to follow that up with the right sort of supports to make sure that any misgivings that may start to present in the workplace in relation to that recent hire, that there is a mechanism to address those things early on. But, you know, a probationary period is there to be used.
Mm.
And sometimes you've got to use it, you know. And whilst you've gone to all the trouble to find someone and whatever else, you know, the mere sense that somebody may not be right, you know, you test that from multiple sources. Mm. And if they're not right, well, they're not right, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, you've got to make that tough call to say goodbye.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, you don't want to keep a person in a situation that's not good for them either. Then, you know, resentment builds up and all sorts of problems, you know, appear.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to shift the conversation a little bit across to you know, different cultures that within which we work. So a lot of businesses that are starting up, you know, and this one that I'm doing now, we're going to quickly go into other jurisdictions. So there's an American frame of mind around, you know, whether they're venture capitalists that you're dealing with or whether prospective clients that you're dealing with, versus an Aussie type of mindset. I would describe it as a little bit more conservative, whereas an American is a little bit more, yep, looks like it works, let's give it a go sort of thing, is my impression. I've done some work in the States, but I can't say I've done a massive amount. And then I guess Europe, where you've got multiple languages, you know, different traditions, particularly, you know, I've got Greek heritage. You know, if I was going to do business in Greek, in Greece, that would be something to consider about what that would look like. What's your experience been? So is there, if you're setting up a company that is a global company and now you're hiring people across jurisdictions, obviously different rules and you know, responsibilities as far as that's concerned, but in terms of getting the right culture from a, say, venture capital point of view, or whether from a contributing, from a skills point of view, how do you look at that?
So, you know, hand up here, I haven't had a global business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had a local Australian sort of business that operated on a national basis in a couple of different stages of my entrepreneurial sort of endeavors, but never have I really had to deal with the differences between, say, working in Canada and Australia, or working in, you know, sort of Southeast Asia and Australia. I've not had to deal with those differences. But if I could just apply, you know, the normal logic to this, is before I went into any of those areas, I would absolutely have my contacts on the ground and who I would rely on for good referral and or being in those locations to commence those conversations.
Yep.
You know, it's like, I don't know, but I recognize I don't know.
Mm.
So the first thing I'm going to do is try and find someone who may be able to refer me to someone who probably does. And it's always like that. Is it the 3 degrees or 6 degrees of separation? You know, you're going to find someone through your networks, or someone you're connected with will be able to help you find someone through their networks, you know. So it's going to work out. So, I reckon you'll get it right, Pete.
Yeah. This other chap that I spoke with last week, Nick, he told this extraordinary story where he was told by a business friend or relation that he needed an advisor from the finance industry, and he gave him a name. And it was a common name, like Bill Smith or something like that. I've actually got a mate called Bill Smith. And so he found him on LinkedIn and reached out to him and connected with him. And the guy was, you know, happy to help him. But what he didn't know is that he had got the wrong Bill Smith. It wasn't the guy he was referred to. It actually was the ex-CFO for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who was kind enough to say, oh, this young fella's reached out to me, so I'm going to help him. So on the advisory board,
great
he went.
Great story. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, believe in what you like, you know, but sometimes the universe plays in your favour. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, you know, because, certainly a man of that character and with his, you know, career and that sort of thing, what a great connection that is to make that. But there's a lot of people that haven't had that level of success in their endeavours or whatever, if you like, you know, the CFO for Gates organisation. You think, man, you know, it's like, there are so many people out there that are able to offer assistance and guidance and all the things that you need. And I think sometimes the stopper is people don't ask.
Absolutely.
You know, people honestly just take it all on. They hold it in. They get all stressed and worry and don't sleep and all those other things. But they're not reaching out. You know, they're not calling for help. You know, it's like, I think the times that I've struggled the most in my career doing what I've been doing is the times where I've been silent about the problems that I was really feeling And they weren't things that I could speak to my partner Joanne about, because they in some ways were a direct reflection on my inability to cope mm-hmm. with where I was at the time. So I didn't want to feel like be that vulnerable to my missus. But eventually, you know, I would have to be, because it comes out. Eventually it comes out. But for the time that, you know, you're holding on to that, you know, that problem or you know, that understanding that, you know, perhaps this business I'm in is the walking dead and I need to move on to something that's more fruitful. But the 100K I've already poured into this one is down the tube, and so now I've got to have that really serious conversation, you know, with my partner in life about, well, look, I'm sorry, I've done it again, but... you know,
thank you. She just looks at the ground, and my mum was right.
Yeah. Will you back me on my next thing?
It's a disease. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting point you make, and I think it's something that's not really discussed very often, because, you know, I certainly and you've spoken about it on a number of occasions with Joe, that. Report, you know, you report to a board and you report to advisors and whatever, but who you really report to when you go back home mm-hmm. and at the kitchen table or the on the, you know, breakfast bench is your partner, who is saying, how's it going? And mm-hmm. she is, I guess, is eyeballing you because they know you. You know.
Well, here's I guess an anecdote that might be useful for anyone to listen to now about relationships and entrepreneurship more generally, is that sometimes in the hustle, you have to know when to say no. You know, you have to do that, because I think if you want to lose your soul or your soulmate, you know, don't pay attention to those things.
Yep.
You have to understand that the journey of being successful, it has to be something that continues to support and enhance the relationships that you value most in the world. You cannot be someone who, to the exclusion of all else, follows through with your dream, because... you know, the divorce, you know, the splitting of the assets, the resulting
impact on the kids, you know.
Yeah, destruction of your life. And then the rebuilding that then has to go on, you know, that's 10 years.
Yeah,
you know?
Easy. Yeah.
I'm not saying you don't do it for those reasons, but when you meet someone, you want to spend the rest of your life with them. There are some things that you shouldn't risk.
Yep.
You know, for that. And I guess, for me, that's something that's, you know, sort of held me back at different times. And I've pursued different opportunities on the basis of a consideration around the implications for my family.
Yeah, sure. So I've seen this on both sides of that. So I've seen it, you know, with my ex-wife. You know, and you say you're tethered, really. You're tethered financially. You're tethered with regards to responsibility, your kids, your families, all that sort of stuff. It's different. So I've got a new partner. She's an amazing human being and supports me in every way that I could ever imagine. And extraordinary in her insights, even though she's not a business person per se. She's highly rational. But we don't share a balance sheet. We don't share, you know, we haven't got kids together. We haven't got a mortgage together. So she can look at things pretty impartially, because if I fly up, she gets a ride. If I crash, you know, I mean, financially, she's not going to, I mean, she might be upset for me and whatever, but she, you know, I'm not going to take her down with me. When you're intertwined, though, maintaining that perspective, what you're saying is right on. I think there needs to be a conversation and needs to be a hard stop on, you know, and it's hard to align two people who are diametrically opposed risk-wise, or who don't, in my view, who don't really, if you have one person who says, look, JOB, and that's it. No risk. You're probably with the wrong person. So there needs to be at least an appreciation of the spectrum of risks that we all take, you know, and the, you know, real versus imagined risks, and sometimes what we think is a risk is actually not, and what we didn't think of, that's the real risk, right? Mm. So, but having some sort of framework to have that conversation, where, and you touched on it before, where you said I can't remember the exact words you used, but you said you don't want to spook her, or you know, or him, you know, you don't want to, you know, put them in a state of fear where now they think he's making decisions that are irrational and they're going to impact on me, and the kids and our way of life. But at the same time, fish got to swim, bird got to fly, right? So if you've got that entrepreneurial character, that's got to be expressed to somehow. Reason needs to, you know.
Well, I think it can be selfish what you've got to do, because the last thing I wanted to do at any point in this journey was conduct myself in a way that would result in some hard decisions having to be made by my partner that put her into a bad position emotionally in relation to our relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that was the last thing I wanted to do. Not to say that there weren't, you know, call it line ball times where that was the case, because, you know, financial pressure, being away from home, you know, by my early days, I was virtually away from home 5 days a week while the kids, you know, were between one and five, you know, so, and there were four of them, you know, so there were, you know, lots of, you know, imagine that, you know, it's like I'm away all week doing my thing, trying to sort of, you know, provide, and you know, my partner's at home doing the hard yards, you know, and so, we I guess we sort of really understood who, you know, what job each of us had, you know, and you know, I'd work 12 hours a day, you know, 5 days a week, you know, trying to get to where we needed to be financially, and you know, Joe was capable of doing the other things that she needed to do, and quite frankly, we were a good fit, because that was her happy place, you know, actually being there. It's not to say that she didn't have her own stresses and all that sort of thing throughout that time, but we talk about it now, and I just think if you're going to go on this journey, it's not your journey, you know, it's your family's journey.
It is.
And you need to be all part of it, you know, and there's great benefits, because, you know, we took the kids on some amazing holidays when they were young, and they got to enjoy some very, you know, fantastic Christmases and things like that. But there were times, maybe 10 years of times, where, you know, we struggled.
Yep.
You know, we struggled. We had to pull our heads in and you know, live frugally and you know, not pay the mortgage down, and, you know, interest only for 10 years, I reckon, we lived in a mortgage for a while. You know, fuck, it was a long period in the desert, you know.
I bet.
Yeah.
Mate, I think that's a great place to stop. I think there's a bunch of topics in there that we could probably talk on and on.
I didn't think I'd be getting into this today. I thought I was going somewhere else with all this, but no, it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for the open way in which you talk. I think I'd like to, you know, keep you in the background to wheel you out once in a while. But maybe before we finish, just tell people what you're doing now and how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to get in touch with you. And we'll
put some certain... Oh, thanks, Pete. I appreciate that.
Put some notes in there.
So I guess I'm looking for a couple of... founders to work with. That's what I'm most interested. I can't spread myself too thin, because, you know, I just don't want to work that hard anymore. But with a couple of founders, I think, you know, I'm probably the right mix of humility and experience to greatly assist them go somewhere with whatever it is they're trying to achieve. And, you know, that's probably where I'm at. I feel like there's a systematic way that you can put a new business together and deal with, you know, all of the things that you've got to do to make it scale. And probably what I'm most good at is the underlying business systems and processes that would support that you know, high growth venture. And so if there's someone out there that's thinking that that's what they'd like to do and they're short of a person that can work for them on a part-time basis to assist in that area, then, you know, I'm probably someone worth speaking to.
Fantastic, and I'd echo that. I think you are definitely worth speaking to, particularly in those early stages. Thank you so much, and I'll definitely have you back next time. Thanks, Norm. Okay, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Norm Jenkins. I think these conversations are very nuanced and very, very important. I think there are a bunch of other topics that we need to talk about, and I will endeavour to make sure that happens in future episodes. Have a wonderful day and stay curious.